The year that I say 7-9 is acceptable is the year you put me out to pasture.
Is that in 2 years?
Put me out pasture. You know, put me out in a cow field in Moon Lake or something, and just let me be. Prop me up against the tree. Let the crows eat it.
Happy holidays, everybody. And the best way to celebrate, get your keister down to Bill Curry Ford. Just north of the stadium on Dale Mabry. Check out BillCurryFord.com for all the deals. They got a tremendous showroom. They will take good care of you with their concierge service. And the biggest point of all, the end of year sales, obviously, don't last. They got a big inventory that they want to move. And as a result, the deals are outstanding. And the best value, it's all about value. And the best value you can get is right now, Bill Curry Ford.
We love Pin Chasers on the Ira Kaufman podcast. That is your place to go bowling in the Tampa Bay area. But not just bowling. Great food, great fun, and great specials every single day. Every day there's a great special. Go to pinchasers.net to see them all and reserve a lane. Thursday night bowling. You could take advantage of that this week. It's the day after New Year's. Drink specials, unlimited bowling on a Thursday night. The bowling is just $10.99 for all you can bowl starting at 9 p.m. And you can have $1 Miller Lights while you bowl as well. Shoes are always free at Pin Chasers. And again, check out all their daily specials, including the Sunday Breakfast Bowl for just $9. That includes breakfast. Pinchasers.net. We'll see you there soon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another edition. A final edition to the regular season, the 2019 regular season. It's the Ira Kaufman Podcast with the one and only, the Prince of Pasco County, the Custodian of Canton, the Sage of Tampa Bay Sports. It's Uncle Ira, Ira Kaufman. Ira, how you doing today, man?
Mr. DeKemper, after a game like this, an indescribable overtime loss to Atlanta, my thoughts turn to one Sean Sullivan, because you and I both know very few fans that take it harder or passionate. He's been watching this team for a long, long time. A game like this, Lee, and I wrote about it this week and you read it, you gotta win at home, Lee. I asked Arians, coach, if I told you you were gonna finish 5-3 on the road and end up 7-9, you would have said I was crazy. He says, I don't need any help thinking you're crazy, Ira. Nah, he didn't say it, but that's what he meant. But he says, absolutely. 5-3 is a formula for meaningful games in December. At the very least, and that's assuming you don't make the playoffs, you go 5-3 on the road, 5-3 at home, which is not too much to ask for any franchise other than this freaking one. Lee, this is the 11th year in a row they haven't had a winning season at home. That's five coaches since Chuck, even Chucky's last 2 years, even with the collapse and everything of 08, he was 6-2 and 6-2.
Oh, was
he? Eagle had a win at home. And Arians is beside himself. I asked Cameron Brate. He doesn't know. I asked DeMar Dotson. He doesn't know. All he knows is it's not happening at home. And Lee, what's the best way to generate fan interest?
Win at home.
Win at home.
Yeah.
Win at home.
These poor people that come out there and they spend thousands, literally thousands of dollars a year, if you add in the parking and all the other stuff. And for what? Every time they come here to get kicked in the pants.
So it's a third place finish. Thank God for the Panthers. They're keeping the Bucks out of that NFC South basement. Lee, 7-9. I know that our comrade, Mr. Isbitz, you didn't say this, but Isbitz said, I don't know, 7-9, it's encouraging. It's +2 from the last couple of years, and it shows encouragement. Lee, the year that I say 7-9 is acceptable is the year you put me out to pasture.
Is that in 2 years?
Put me out pasture. You know, put me out in a cow field in Moon Lake or something, and just let me be. Prop me up against the tree. Let the crows eat it. 7-9, Lee, what are we talking about over here? No, you don't wipe out the first half of the season. You don't wipe out the 3-7 start. And Arian said it. Lee, you've said it many times on this podcast, and I'm going to lead into your comments right now. Bucks beating Bucks. Do we need more of an example than today?
This is the perfect example of today. Before I get rolling here, I got to apologize to you, Ira. I was out of control. We're broadcasting at Bill Curry Ford, and I said you got me so upset about wanting a linebacker in the draft, I wanted to punch you. I never wanted to punch you.
Thank you.
Choke somebody.
Choke somebody.
Not.
And by the way, that linebacker ran a fumble back 91
yards. Yeah, nice stupid score.
Yeah, yeah. But, so what about Bucks beating Bucks, Lee?
Well, this is perfect. Three missed field goals. And, of course, you saw this coming down Dale Mabry Highway. a Jameis pick six. Now, that came in overtime. That did the game in. No doubt about it. Jameis screwed up. After the game, he said it was tipped. But you don't throw a pass that's tippable in that position. You just don't do it. Now, having said that, and this is not an excuse, facts are not excuses. If Matt Gay doesn't take a leak in his pants, this team, including Jameis, walks out of here a winner.
If he hits even two out of those three.
Well, one even.
Yeah.
One even. I mean, it was a tie game. They go
then Atlanta would have needed a field goal, a touchdown.
A touchdown, yeah. Yeah. So, James, they would have won. Now, think about how the impact those three missed field goals are. Just think about this. We spoke with Arians after the game. Well, we didn't speak with him. We talked to him. He's, you know, it's a one-way conversation when it's a press conference. Or at least it should be. Arians was so hacked off about that pick six. There's no question in my mind. And when he was asked several times, he answered it the same way every time, no matter what way you tried. All bets are off on Jameis now. All bets are off on Jameis.
Full evaluation.
Yes, all bets are off. If Jameis is not brought back because of that pick six, Matt Gay may have cost the Bucs their best quarterback they've ever had.
You know,
it came down to that.
Lee, speaking of Matt Gay, I think I said it a week ago, he's had a solid rookie. Two losses are at the feet, literally the feet of Matt Gay, mm-hmm. the right foot of Matt Gay, mm-hmm. the Giants game. You got to make that field goal. Mm-hmm. That's why you were drafted. Make that field goal. Everybody goes home happy, and nobody's talking about Daniel Brown and the great second half comeback. And that followed up on the great win at Carolina. And
Daniel Jones, you mean, right?
Yeah,
quarterback of the Jets.
Yeah.
And you're thinking of David Brown.
Yeah. And now, I'm not letting Gay off the hook over here. He's missed five extra points and eight field goals. That's nothing to be proud of in a rookie season. So today was a disaster. You're right. Everybody's going to focus on the pick six in overtime.
And I'm not ignoring it.
And I'm not ignoring it. And there was a previous interception. And there was a fumble by Ronald Jones, who atoned in grand form after that fumble. You heard me ask this to Mr. Bruce Arians. And it's the, you know, there's a million numbers. Analytics are going crazy. Everybody wants to know, you know, what percentage you blitzed people and how many pressures you had. Lee, simple number, minus 13. Turnover differential.
Oh.
Minus 13. Arians says, you can't win like that. You can't win like that.
Yeah.
41 giveaways. I believe they led the league in giveaways. But 41, that's the number. That's the final number. 30 picks and 11 lost fumbles. 41. It's a big number, Lee.
Yeah.
It's a big number. Mm-hmm. Look at the disparity, Mr. DeKemper. Interceptions. Bucks allow 30. Bucks grab 12. That's big.
And why did they lose so much last year? Same thing. I mean, it's huge. I can understand if Jameis is not here next year. I just couldn't give up on a guy with that much upside.
Well, you're making the strong point. Who are you going to get? You got to ask that question. Who are you going to get?
Yeah, I mean, I can understand they don't bring him back. But like that, you know, 5,000 yards passing. And I just looked it up last night. The Bucs are second in the league. Entering today, the Bucs are second in the league in first downs by pass. Second in the league. That's moving the ball.
And most yards in the league.
Yards. And they're up points, or what, third, I think?
29 points. That's a big, big number.
Yeah, so I you know, are the interceptions...
Those are the reasons to keep Winston.
Yeah, are the interceptions bad? Of course they are. I just think that the positive numbers outweigh the negative numbers, though the negative numbers have to come down. I always bring up how Fran Tarkenton called you up, and you got him to talk about Jameis, and he unloads on Jameis. Here's a guy that threw 32 picks in 1 year. And I just
thought, I think it was his last year.
And they won the division, went to the playoffs, 1979. And then I saw something, I'm going to write this up at some point. I was appalled at this. I really was, for a lot of reasons. But the NFL ended their top 100 players with the quarterback selection. And they selected Favre, this committee did, led by Belichick. Bill Belichick. And
I was not on that committee.
You were not on that, but you're on the one that counts, the Hall of Fame. This is the NFL Network, NFL Films production. They had Brett Favre on there. Now, personally, I'd put Derek Bradshaw over Brett Favre. That's just me. Terry Bradshaw. I mean, guy won four Super Bowls, and in big games, that guy shined. He loved the limelight.
Especially the last two Super Bowls.
Oh, yeah. He put the team on his shoulders. When there was injuries, Swan got hurt. Mean Joe Green got hurt. Yeah, exactly. Favre was in studio with Belichick. Chris Collinsworth was there. And Collinsworth tells Favre, who's not exactly known for accuracy himself, He said, my favorite game of yours that you impressed me the most of all games was your pick six game in the playoffs against the Rams. And he was serious. He goes, that showed me that you didn't care, that you're going to keep firing. By the way, didn't Jameis say that's what Arians told him, keep firing? And I'm thinking to myself,
of all the games that Favre played in, all the great comebacks, that's the one Collinsworth picks out?
He threw six interceptions.
Against the Rams.
In the playoffs, yes.
Wow.
Threw six interceptions. And Collinsworth said he was so impressed by that because he just didn't give a damn, kept throwing. And he was dead serious. And I'm thinking, if Jameis did that in a regular season game, people would yell at him, man.
Yeah, they...
And what I'm getting at is, Favre played in the same decade, this decade, he played in this decade, that Jameis came in. Jameis came in the league in 2015, Favre played in 2010. I would, and I'm not saying interceptions are good, but what I'm trying to say is people are freaking out by Jameis's interception, and they should. But why is Favre get a pass? Where was this act of Congress written that Trump signed that interceptions were okay until 1914 or 2014?
Interesting.
I mean, I can see if someone said it's a different era. Favre and Jameis is only a five-year difference there. To me, that's the same era. And I was appalled when I heard Collins. You're kidding me? And I'm thinking to myself, Jameis did that in a regular season game against the Falcons, a nothing game.
Look,
with
Lee,
nothing on line, the hysteria would be out of bounds.
Wait, they finished with 48 offensive touchdowns. That's three per game. That's a good average. That's besides your field goals.
Mm-hmm.
And if Gay was a little better, they'd score more points.
Sure.
And they averaged 398 yards of offense, and the opponent's 344. That's a big disparity every week. The Bucs were gaining 50 yards more than every... Again, Bucs being Bucs. Now,
Bucs beating Bucs.
Lee, I want to get back to this game against Atlanta. I think it would be foolish to say that the Bucs outplayed the Falcons. I don't think they did.
Three quarters they did.
The Falcons owned the time of possession by a big whopping margin. They ran a lot more plays than the Bucs did. And by the way, when you were talking about Bucs being Bucs, you didn't mention this. 12 penalties. Another 12 penalties.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an old story around here, too. Mm-hmm. And we got to get that straightened out. Actually, props to Arians for throwing the flag on the the non-interference call, and then they changed it. And this league's had trouble doing that.
I was surprised he challenged an interference.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he didn't challenge for hands to the face, which is a personal foul.
Usually you don't get that the non-interference turned around called when there's no flag on the field. It's sort of like I told you, you know, it's come down from the top of the league. Don't challenge that. You're going to waste a timeout.
He still does.
And he has wasted timeouts. But he got this one. He did get this one. And they upheld White's 91-yard fumble return.
Thankfully.
Which could have went either way.
Since 1981, there's only been two rookies that had two scooping scores. Devin White's one of them. Dell, I can't think of the last name, for the Packers. Back in like 80 or 81. But here's the kicker. Didn't White have a scooping score called back?
Lee, the crowd today was okay. But I look out on the east side, Lee, and I look at the club seats just like you do. Boy, they're having trouble filling those club seats, Lee. Now, I don't know if they're sold and people aren't showing up.
Could be. I don't know. Yeah, it's a good question.
Upper deck wasn't bad, and lower deck wasn't bad today. But that's 2 weeks in a row I noticed. The club-level seats, it's been a tough sell.
And you can't blame the weather today.
Can't blame
now,
the weather.
Now, last week you could have said, okay, the Saturday before Christmas. I can understand that people have plans. But this was... Who's taking off a Sunday before New Year's Eve?
Lee, who showed up today? Well, Ronald Jones showed up after an early gaffe.
Devin White.
The pass rush was outstanding.
Great.
Outstanding. I thought Matt Ryan was under siege.
Mm-hmm.
He made some great throws, Ryan, just to get rid of the ball.
Yeah.
They had six sacks, Lee. I think they had 14 quarterback hits. Barrett was tremendous.
Yeah.
JPP. Now, Lee, I got to do a mea culpa here. It's not the first one I've done this year. It won't be the last one, you know, in the next few months either. When JPP had that horrendous accident, I said, chop him up, get rid of him. Coming back. I said, chop him up, save the money. You know, it's a non-football injury. Maybe you don't have to pay him anything or whatever. Lee, I was wrong. The guy played better as the season went on. Instead of getting tired, maybe he was fresh because he missed quite a bit of action. He was a monster last week against Houston with three sacks. And today, he terrorized here's the impact of that. Lee, if you bring back Barrett, and Arians seems to leave no doubt that Barrett's coming back one way or the other, he ain't going nowhere. Is that the quote, Lee?
He ain't going nowhere.
So if that's true, I think it's incumbent, and I think this is where JPP weighs more heavily than the Domicom suit. Maybe you disagree. But if I got to pick between those two, I'm taking the pass rusher. I'm taking Pierre Paul to help out Barrett and take some heat off Barrett.
Well, you know, I don't disagree with you. And just when I thought, turn a page on Ndamukong Suh, and he put out something on his Instagram account. It was a quote from Louis L'Amour. When it looks like the end is near, it only means it's a new beginning.
That is intriguing.
Yeah.
That is intriguing.
I don't know if that means he's leaving the Bucks. I don't know if that means he's retired.
Maybe he's gotten some feelers that he's not coming back. I'm not sure it means that he doesn't want to come back.
And it could be, I mean, he's buddy-buddy with Warren Buffett. Who knows how to make a buck or two?
Oh, I got a quick nugget for you, Lee. You love the little nuggets.
Oh, Warren Buffett nuggets?
No, I was doing Bucks tailgate Sunday.
Yes. The final one of the decade.
Final one, 10:30, and Ricky Reynolds beat me out by one game on the picks.
Oh.
But I won my make your case against him.
You do well on it.
And they asked for three headlines for the Bucks in the offseason. That was the make your case. Mm-hmm. My three were number three, Sue moves on to the New Orleans Saints. Two, Bucks sign Shaq Barrett, 4 years, $60 million. And number one, Bucks franchise Winston and pick Jake Fromm in the third round.
I heard
and
about
that comes
Bruce
from
Fromm.
Our boy Sean Sullivan.
I heard about the Fromm.
So here's the nugget. I'm getting ready to go on the air. It's about 10:25. You know, some Buck coaches are walking the field like they like to go around and get some exercise. And I see, you know, a civilian walking the field, mm-hmm. dark clothes on. And I say to Scott Smith,
Secret Service?
I said, that's Drew Rosenhaus. So he's strolling past us. He was in the house then.
It was Drew Rosenhaus.
It was Drew Rosenhaus. And as he's
walking, Drew Rosenhaus.
As he's walking past me, I say, and I knew the answer, but I'm going to ask him anyway. I go, hey, Drew, you got Shaq Barrett? All he did was turn around, looked at me, and he goes, yes, I do. And the biggest smile you could ever imagine.
Oily
the man wants to get paid.
Sure.
Yeah, Rosenhaus is good at his job, Lee.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, GMs may not like to deal with him. Although, you know what? I don't think he's on the list of the worst agents to deal with. I'm not sure.
Oh, no.
He's been in this business a long time, so he's doing something right.
Let's just say that very, very good source. That a couple years ago when DeMar Dotson tried to squeeze the Bucks, and basically Jason Light told his agent, I'm cleaning it up considerably. Go take a long hike on a short pier. And Dotson, after a couple weeks, came back and fired his agent.
The difference is Dotson didn't have leverage, and Shaq Barrett's got all kinds of leverage. He's got more leverage than he uses on the football field, and he's damn good at using his leverage.
Then your story about Oily Drew Rosenhaus sort of reinforces, and I think after today's game, it makes more and more sense that your franchise Shaq, you might get Jameis somewhat cheap because now you're going to tell Jameis, you want $30 million? Good luck.
Well, maybe you give him a one-year deal for $30
million. Yeah, okay, one-year deal with a one-year option, okay. I was thinking, before today, maybe you sign him to a contract that equals the same length as Light's contract and Arians, which both end in 4 years. Word the contract in so many ways that you could CYA yourself, that you're not stuck with him.
You were taken a little bit aback by Arians today at the podium. You thought he might say, the receivers didn't run some good routes on those interceptions. They weren't Winston's fault. We didn't hear that from Arians.
He called Jameis out. That's the first time all year. And I think I went to you right when the press conference was over. I said, I thought that's the harshest Arians has ever been on Jameis. And you said, you're right. And I applaud it.
Yeah,
it sounds
good. I think
good.
He's made a lot of excuses for him during the season.
Sure, he has. More than I would have. Believe it or not, more than I would have.
Now, we don't know what he says behind closed doors.
That we don't. And I know Beckles has stuck up for Jameis. You know, people call it excuses. I heard Beckles' podcast recently. For example, the pick six, the first play of the game Saturday against Houston. He said, number one, Justin Watson ran the laziest route he ever saw. Number two, that play shouldn't be called. Number three, Jameis should have never thrown it.
Anything else?
Yeah. He blamed Watson and Leftwich more than anything. He goes, yeah, Jameis shouldn't have thrown it. And he said, well, Watson was awful. And he said, why was Leftwich calling for Watson on that play? He said, it should have never happened. Getting back to the game, you know what? That pick six to end the game, how predictable was that? Your friend and mine, Dr. David Wink, he texted me maybe a minute.
And you saw it? And you saw
it? Oh, yeah, I saw it. He said, could you imagine if Jameis throws a pick six right away to end this game?
That is unbelievable.
Sure enough, and Joe Henderson.
Shame on you, Wink. Shame on you, Doc.
And Joe Henderson said he did the same thing. He was texting a relative, And he said, this just smells like Jameis Winston's throwing a pick six here. He's got a reputation. He's Mr. Excitement, and he's Mr. Pick Six.
He finished with seven, Lee. That was his seventh and last of the season. Boy, that's a big number. That's 49 points for the opposition.
If anybody needs a shrink, it's him. And I'm a Jameis supporter, but there's something going on
now, Lee. I'm going to kick off the start of the offseason. It's never too early. You ready for this? And I'm going to say it right up front, baby, because you got me going. 2019, to a large degree, was about marginal competition next to none competition behind number three at the quarterback spot. Everybody said that. Mm-hmm. Fitzpatrick's gone. You know, we got Gabbert and a guy who's never thrown a pass in the NFL. And he's going to get the full season. Mm-hmm. Now, here's how I'm going to kick off 2020. That's not going to be the case in 2020, even assuming Winston's coming back. He is not guaranteed the full season. And I damn guarantee you that Arians will look at the backup and say to himself, if you're messing up and we're 1-3, you're in danger of losing your job. Yeah. That was never going to be the case in 2019. I believe the dynamics will shift markedly even if Winston returns. Am I wrong?
No. If he returns, I guarantee you're absolutely right. If he returns.
He does not get the full season. He does not get no competition.
He hasn't earned it. I love the 5,000 yards. I love the touchdowns. I love all the positives. But that negative is so large, it doesn't consume the positives, but it's large enough that he has little margin for error, no leverage.
If he's playing poorly, Lee, and the Bucs are off to a bad September,
he's gone.
He's in trouble. He's gonna lose his job.
Yeah.
And nobody should blame Arians if that happens. Nobody. They need a viable option.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, look, Arians loves, Gabbert. I don't know why, Lee. he's the epitome of a journeyman. And he's not as good as Fitzpatrick.
No.
As Fitzpatrick proved again today, marching up and down the field against that defense in Foxborough with nothing to play for.
They played Miami, didn't they?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
No, they did not play in Miami. Shocking. Shocking collapse by the Patriots. Cost them a first-round bye. And my Chiefs step into that number two spot. So I'm a happy camper. They're going to have a viable option, at least in Arians' mind. And if Arians thinks Gabbert's a viable option, fine. He knows a lot more about football than I do. But he's not going to be patient with Winston if Winston's back on this team, Lee. He's not.
Another reason I would bring Jameis back in line, okay, maybe I'm not objective about it, but last night I read a column by Mike Sando of The Athletic.
He's very into analytics, Sando.
Yeah, and he did a breakdown on what Arians' quarterbacks have done the second year under him. Big jump. Positive. And
I even said Carson Palmer made a big jump in the second half of that first season.
Which he did.
And he did. And I don't think Winston can claim that.
No. Sando is not a Jameis guy. So for him to write that to me, it's telling. So we shall see. I don't know what to make it of anymore. I just think Jameis needs a shrink. And we're sitting here talking about the pick six, and yeah, it was important. Darn right it was important. But that drive in the first half, I said to myself, oh, wait, we got the quote of the year. Before, I said to myself, the drive at the end of the first half, Buck scored that touchdown, and that touchdown reminded me of a touchdown you saw when you were a Cub reporter for UPI. But when I saw that play and that drive,
on a pass that probably should have never been thrown.
Yeah. I said to myself, this is why the guy's coming back right here.
Also said the Bucs are going to win this game.
We all thought that.
When you come up with a play like that.
Yeah.
By the way, props to Perryman.
He said Jameis threw it at the only point that it could have been caught, and he said he tried to high point it. He was asked, were you about getting your feet? He goes, no, I was worried about getting the catch.
Lee, this is what is so eye-opening about Perryman. He's not catching 45-yard balls where he gets past the defender.
Yeah.
He's making sideline catches.
Yeah.
He's making the crazy one, getting his feet down. Nobody ever said that about the Breshard Perryman, is that he's an acrobat and he's Chris Carter on the sidelines.
Yeah.
In the last 5 weeks, he's made some very, very impressive catches.
He's improved great deal.
Not just his speed. Not just his
speed.
Like
you said, I can't imagine John Lynch isn't going to go after him.
He's going to make himself some money.
Oh, yeah. The play that Jameis touched on the pyramid at the end of the first half, what play am I referring to? You saw it when you were a young reporter for UPI.
It could be a game-ending Hail Mary in the end zone.
Close. And people are going to throw up when I say it. But I swear to God, go to YouTube and watch that play and watch the play that Jameis made. Tell me it's not the same play.
Don't tell me it's the Montana to the catch to Dwight Clark. Veering to his right and running out of room.
Running out and starts, takes a couple step backs and the guy in his face. And throws to that end of the end zone.
Montana swears that was the set. He knew that Clark was there. I don't know if I believe that. It sounds good.
I vividly remember where I was at when I saw that play.
And you know who the DB that got beat on that?
Emerson Walls. Yeah. I vividly remember. I was just out of high school when I saw that play.
I was at that game.
Yeah, I know you covered the UPI. Yeah. And I
back
said
right
to myself,
corner of the end zone.
And I said to myself, he's thrown it away. And then Clark comes out of nowhere and catches that. Tell me that wasn't a very similar
That's
play.
That's not badly.
Perriman came in from the center of the field. So did Clark.
The difference is this was a 6-9 team against the 7-8 team. Lee, I got another nugget for you. I got another pregame nugget for you. All right, I'm up in the press box. The game's going to start in about 20 minutes. And I'm down at the end where the Buccaneer announcers are and Gene Deckerhoff and whatever. And, of course, I can hear Javier saying right now, what are you doing at that end of the press box? I'm getting a cookie, Javier. What else? And maybe a brownie to match. And all of a sudden, here comes all the Falcon assistant coaches. Not all of them. Raheem stayed on the field. Mm-hmm. But who do I see? I see Dirk Cutter. You know, he's with this group and they're all going into this room. It might be the room we're in right now doing this podcast. And I see him and he sees me. And I said, and I raised my right hand. Hey, Dirk. I mean, it's the holiday season, DeKemper. You know, marry this and marry that. I got a look from Cutter. He just kept walking, never even acknowledged.
Every once in a while, he gets in those zones.
Now, of course, the first thing he's probably thinking is, this is the clown that called for my head a year ago in Tampa. So I thought a year had passed. Bygones be bygones, Lee. Not in the NFL.
I'll give you my Cutter story. I literally ran into him similar circumstance, what you're talking about. Although I wasn't getting food. I was going to...
And you didn't call for his head either.
No, that's true. Indiana Convention Center. Come on. I saw him walking down the sidewalk. We were like, you know, two ships passing sort of kind of thing. He was looking down on his phone. I kind of looked up. Like, oh, there's Dirk Cutter. Maybe 5 foot in front of me. I said, hey, Dirk, how you doing? And he's looking down on his phone. He looks up and he sees me and he breaks out in a big smile. Hey, Lee, what's happening?
This is like 6 weeks after he was
canned. Yeah, 6 weeks after he was canned. And we chatted very briefly. And he's like, Lee, I'm not trying to give you the brush off. I'm 10 minutes from a meeting. I got to get to a meeting. So, okay, I know they're in meetings. They're interviewing players. So, but, yeah, I mean, I saw the big smile on his face. He looks up and he says, like that.
Let me ask you what kind of vibes you got. I'll tell you mine. Two guys in particular. I know you talked to one. You might have talked to both. But I'm talking about number 69, DeMar Dotson, 84, Cameron Brate. Now, technically, Brate's under contract for next season. Not a UFA, but Dotson is. And I believe one of 19 for the Bucs. That's a big number.
Wow.
Dotson wants to play football. So for anybody who thinks Dotson wants to retire, he doesn't. Mm-hmm. If the Bucs don't want him, he's going to go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. We'll see if he can win a starting job. We'll see. He's so thankful for the career that he's had. He has no regrets. But it hurts him that he's never been in a postseason game.
Yeah.
I don't think Brate knows where he fits in next year. I really don't.
Is that right?
I think he doesn't know how the Bucs feel about him. O.J. Howard comes into the mix. Lee, I don't want to stress this too much. I don't know what's going on with O.J. Howard. I just don't know.
You know, he's
become a non-factor, Lee.
He's become a non-factor. And what's interesting is, you said it. You had a perfect analogy. Right now, he looks like an athlete trying to be a football player.
There's a difference.
Yeah.
There's a difference. And don't the Bucs have to decide about Howard's future before they can figure out whether they want to bring Brate back? Can they lose both tight ends?
Well, I don't think Howard's in any danger at all to be cut loose because he's still on a rookie contract. So, economically, it doesn't make sense. Brate's a different animal. Brate's got a nice piece of change of contract.
He does.
And the fact that they don't use tight ends, he knows it. He's vulnerable now. He knows it.
He'll get another job.
Oh, sure. Sean Payton screamed, or not bellyache and screamed, but was chagrined that he lost Brate. And so he might go back to New Orleans. I was talking to Brate this past week. Hey, last week you guys knew tight ends are going to be a focal point of the game. You know, O.J. Howard said Jameis had told him, get ready for the Rock. The Rock is coming. And I said, you know, Cam, I'm not trying to bring up ugly memories. He had a bad drop. But I said, the fact that you guys were told there's going to be part of the game plan, and yet you had your issues, what do you think? And he told me, he said, well, first off, if you're not part of a game plan every week, it's hard to snap your fingers and get the rust off. Now, he didn't use that excuse. He says, that doesn't mean you don't play well. We get enough practice time. That shouldn't be an issue. He said, but in the offense, he goes, there's no question that this offense goes through Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. And he goes, and it should. Think about this.
That's a Harvard man talking.
Yeah. I mean, he knows where his bread's buttered. He knows that, you know, even though he wants the ball, he wants the rock, the smart thing to do is go through Godwin and Evans, your Pro Bowl receivers.
Just a quick break in the podcast to remind you that the end of the year is here, and that means those incredible, truly incredible year-end offers are ready for you right now at Bill Curry Ford. Get to BillCurryFord.com to start shopping. And end of the year in the car business is real. It's legit. Great opportunities, and they're all right now at Bill Curry Ford, a mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. And if you're not ready to buy a car or a truck or an SUV right now, that's fine. Remember that Bill Curry Ford has its nationwide lifetime warranty year-round, new and pre-owned vehicles, BillCurryFord.com.
Sue is always the first player off the field.
You know, by his actions, Sue's kind of telegraphing what kind of offseason he's going to have. He might be joining another team.
But he was doing that the first week of the season.
Yeah.
He was doing that the first week of the season. And the other two characters that were doing it, DeSean Jackson always did that. No further explanation needed. And when the Bucks would win, LeGarrette Blount would do that. Now, if a Bucks lost and he had a good game, he was one of the last guys off the field. I mean, he was enjoying the glory.
You know, you mentioned LeGarrette Blount, and I put him on my all-decade Buck team.
You should have.
Because I couldn't come up with another running back after Doug Martin. And I really could. And he only lasted, you know, the first 3 years of the decade.
And there's Adam Hayward.
Yes, Adam. You love that. But Lee, about Blount, and you were in the locker
room. And I get along with him really well. Yeah. I don't dislike him at all.
You know what I remember about Blount in the locker room is, I think his running buddy was Mike Williams.
You mean stripper pole Mike Williams?
Yeah. I mean, you know, Mike Williams had a couple of good years at receiver.
Mattress in the yard?
But then he blew up, like Michael Clayton before him. A talented wide receiver who doesn't develop. Like, guys like that, we've been killing this franchise for years about developing players. Michael Clayton, you remember, what a rookie season.
Yeah.
He looked fantastic.
And downhill after that.
So, you know, whether it's Freeman or whatever. Now, Lee, this is going to be the big topic of the offseason, and I'll start it off right now, and we'll only touch on it, but what is their priority, Mr. DeCamper? They're not going to draft a quarterback at 16 and start all over with a 67-year-old coach and a rookie quarterback. You wouldn't think.
I wouldn't think, no.
You wouldn't think.
Now, I'm not putting it past him, because right now I think all bets are off.
And you think an offensive lineman is iffy because they take some years to develop, so
and Aaron's already
saying you're going to say get another pass rusher.
Either that
Which
or...
they might be able to get maybe the third guy off the board in terms of a pass rusher.
Yeah. Either that or a running back.
Now, you want Ronald Jones back on this team.
Yeah, he's cheap, and he's showing something, as opposed to the previous season where he showed you nothing.
And Barber's a potential UFA, I believe.
Yeah, he is. By the way, Bob Barber, I checked this out Saturday night, did some research. ESPN, I can't remember what the cutoff was. I think 50. Peyton Barber is having his worst year.
So you wanted a guy with a minimum of... X amount
of
carries. Yeah.
And Peyton Barber is having his worst year of a blah career as far as yards per carry. 3.1 as of yesterday. Take a guess who was rock bottom, the worst running back.
He finished at 3-1.
Well, it's very likely Peyton Barber is rock bottom in the NFL. Because ESPN stats last night, the worst guy in the NFL.
And he had 154 carries, so maybe the cutoff was 100 or whatever.
I was thinking maybe the cutoff was 50, I don't know.
Yeah.
But
so he at the very bottom?
Rock bottom. No one worse.
And last year, Ronald Jones was the worst. 1.9.
So if Barber was the worst and he's a free agent, I'm going to take a claim on a limb here and suggest that there's not going to be much of a market for him.
You're right, Lee. You're right.
And that's also
It might be the fourth back on a team.
Well, today was the first game all year. But think about this. I know it's a passing league, but if you walked up to some schlub on the street, on the sidewalk, and say, the Bucks don't have any running back that had 100 yards in a game this year, they wouldn't believe it. Even though it's a passing, you still periodically get guys, not the Bucks. Today was the first game, and it was the last game of the season where the Bucs had a 100-yard rush and barely.
Jones made some nice runs today.
Yeah, he did. He did. Now,
why, explosive runs.
Yes. Now, why he wasn't in there in the fourth quarter and they had Peyton Barber. Oh, by the way, I'll never forget. I put this on Twitter. Peyton Barber up the middle, lost a yard. I said, who knew? Twitter, who knew? And now, why? You know, Aaron's always talking about the hot hand. And I told this to someone earlier today, and they got a good laugh out of it. It was D. Orlando Ledbetter. Daryl, I told him this.
With the bow tie.
He got a good... D. Orlando Ledbetter is the Falcons beat writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, otherwise known as Richard Jewell's paper. Laughter, Ivor, laugh.
Not badly.
I told Daryl this. He got a good laugh. Earlier this year, the Bucks all but like... I think in the first month, all but like five or six runs... was Peyton Barber up the middle. Peyton Barber up the middle. On first down, Peyton Barber up the middle. Peyton Barber up the middle. And he went nowhere every time. And so I asked Leftwich, I said, do you think you're tipping pitches some way that when they see Barber in the backfield on first down, they know what's coming up the middle? He gave me a one-word answer, and he glared at me when he said it. The one word was, no.
No.
Yeah.
No.
And Daryl laughed, and he goes, offensive coaches hate that. And he told me a story just this year. Cutter gone on him because he asked Cutter about tipping pitches. So, and Cutter didn't like it.
He bristled. I can see it. All right, let's look at the overview. 7-9, finished the season with a 2-game losing streak. Both games at home. 2-6 at home, albeit one of the games was in London. I understand that. Still means you went 2-5 at Raiders.
And that was a rugged road schedule. Rugged.
And they went 5-3.
Yes.
Do you believe Bruce Arians, yes or no, when he stands at the podium, as he has about 9 times this season, and said, talent is not an issue at one Buck place?
Well, you know what? He's been saying the same
thing. Now he's saying it at the end of the season.
He's saying the same thing Dungy and Cutter said for years. And I'm starting to think
if you like the talent, you're 7-9, that means your staff didn't do an exceptional job, Lee. In a sense.
I don't disagree. Or it could be that famous phrase that he coined, Bucks beating Bucks. And when you got a guy that throws pick sixes half the time and 30 picks, and you had a defense for half a year that couldn't stop a pass to save their life.
By the way, they stunk on third down today. Stunk.
Not great. Not great, even though
they have been doing well. They have been doing well.
And I wonder how much that was Sean Murphy bunting.
No, I mean the Buck offense. What was lousy?
Oh, no, they weren't.
They were not good on third down.
No, they were not, especially the second half. Fourth quarter in particular. No, they were not. They were not good. Penalties killed them. I mean, they were moving the ball at times, and penalties, they got whistled for penalties.
You know one of the things that jumped out at me today? Atlanta's not any good.
That's not
a good team.
No.
They've already named Raheem...
defense coordinator.
By the way, another nugget. A third pregame nugget.
Oh, let's see the behind the scenes.
Doing the show, and we're getting ready to go on. All of a sudden, I see somebody coming across the field from behind me, because my back's to the field. And the guy almost broke through, and he's on the set. Raheem Morris.
Oh.
I mean, we're going on in about 30 seconds. And just want to say hello, guy. Just, and he knows Jeff Tewksbury, the cameraman.
Yeah.
Hey, how you doing? He didn't call me Sage, I hope he knows that I've written about 3 columns for Joe Bucks fan in the last 2 years about, hey, how about giving Raheem another chance? And the fact that he's going to be the D coordinator, it's already been decided.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I think that's going to help him, Blaine.
I will say this about Raheem. He was no friend of Joe Bucks fan. Steve and I had no issue with Raheem. He had a major issue with us, to his credit. For example, when they got to the Super Bowl a couple years ago, he spoke with me for about 20 minutes.
During Super Bowl week.
The media night, which they call Super Bowl prime time, I think now.
Nice.
He spoke with me one-on-one for about 20 minutes.
Wow.
And I know he doesn't like Joe Bucks fan. So I give him credit for
and
that.
And your credential thing said Joe Bucks fan.
Yeah.
He knew.
Yeah, he knew. So I got to give him a lot of props for that. First coach that liked Joe Bucks fan was Shiano. Not that I care or not, but if the coach doesn't like you, you can really have the vices squeezing on you.
I don't think Arians has any issue with us, Lee.
I was fortunate enough to have cocktails with him once before, and he remembers that. All right, Liam.
Anyway, finishing up on a 2-game losing streak, Lee. Bad taste in your mouth?
Of course, but here's what I'm going to ask you about the 2-game losing streak. The last month, you know the Glazer family better than anybody in Tampa Bay media. Arrow pointing up, that's their big thing. Arrow pointing up, arrow pointing down. Now, I'm not suggesting they're going to have a house clean. Please don't get me wrong. Where is it pointing?
Well, 2 weeks ago, we definitely would have said it's up with a four-game winning streak. I still think they might look at it as a plus-two season in terms of where they were the last 2 years. That's a fact. Can't argue with that. It's a plus-two. Arians isn't happy with 7-9. I know that. The Glazers should not be happy with 7-9. I don't think they are. You don't wipe away the first half of the season. You can't do that. But players develop. You and I have talked about that. I think that's going to be a key factor in the Glazer mind about this coaching staff. This franchise has not been blessed with player development. And we saw it quite a bit in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
You and I have rattled off the names. You can name a half a dozen guys that have made big, big strides this year.
Kappa,
and some guys that you thought were marginal players, like Ronald Jones.
And Kappa.
And Jamel Dean from the first half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I love Jamel Dean. I didn't think they threw against him at all today.
Maybe not.
You know, so, look, they got to get things cleaned up, Lee. But we've been saying this for so many years that I'm not going to believe it until I see it, Lee. They don't deserve the benefit of the doubt, this franchise. They don't. They don't.
Bad.
And you always mention that, what kind of bad start they get off to. Always in September. Always behind the eight ball.
Yeah. You know, I might be getting ahead of myself here talking about next year. And it's still December.
Well, you're thinking about the trip to Vegas, Lee. I know you. You're planning that.
Of course. Do you think the Bucks may have a bigger rebuilding job than many fans either aren't thinking of or aren't aware of?
They're not going to be able to keep everybody. I remember Joe Blazer said years ago, we never lost a guy that we really wanted. We never lost a guy to free agency. Well, if that's true, and I don't think it is, this year could be the first. I don't think Sue's coming back. I guess you could argue, well, that's their decision. They want to move on without him. That's going to hurt the run defense a little bit. But
the turnovers, too. He's so athletic, like that tip ball he had today.
Boy, they had a lot of tip balls. Golson had a big one on fourth and one.
Mm-hmm.
Big one. And I believe he was playing inside on that play.
He was.
I checked it. He was playing inside. And usually you don't see him on it's a fourth and one, so they thought maybe they would run the ball, too. I tend to believe Arians in this regard. This is not the Cincinnati Bengals. It's not. This is not the Redskins. This is a average team that had a chance to go 9-7, at least 8-8, if the field goal kicker was any good today, which he wasn't. And if you're 8-8 and you're minus 13 in turnover differential, that kind of leads you to believe you got some talent.
We all know with free agents, once a guy hits the market, All bets are off. And before the quote-unquote all bets are off, general managers generally have an idea that they have a prayer of re-signing a guy. Now, they'll hear through the grapevine who's offering what. If the Bucks lose most of their free agents, let's say they lose Shaq, they lose Parham, they lose JPP. If they lose enough free agents, would you, as Jason Light, would you be willing to say, you know what, we're losing all these guys, this is going to be a rebuild, whether Arians likes it or not, I'm going to go out and get a quarterback and say bye-bye, Jameis. I'll just go draft a quarterback in the first round.
The Glazers would have to allow that.
Okay.
The Glazers would have to allow that. It's an interesting scenario. Suppose they lose JPP. Suppose they want to keep him and they still lose.
Yeah.
Which is possible.
It's very possible.
Like you said, all it takes is one team. Suppose they want to keep Barrett. They don't franchise him, and they lose him. Some team gives him $70 million for 4 years. You offered him $62 million for 4 years. Well, you know Rosenhaus. You ain't getting no hometown discounts. And I really can't blame Barrett if he takes the $70 million, and neither can you. You're right. That would change the equation markedly about this team because it would send a terrible message to the young guys on this defense. It might make them retrench with a young quarterback. A younger quarterback than Winston.
That's what I was thinking. I mean, if you're going to lose...
I hope that doesn't happen.
So do I. I mean, if you're going to lose X amount of guys, and like, you know, this is going to be a rebuild regardless, we might as well get a new quarterback. Now, with Jameis, and I'll say this, we know about Shaq Barrett. The fact that he has Rosenhaus, I am more and more inclined, there's the word you like to use, I'm more emboldened now than I was 5 hours ago before the game started, that the Bucks need to not franchise Jameis, but franchised Barrett and signed James. And after today, not only am I more emboldened about that, I think the Bucks have even more leverage against James.
What if you use a transition on one and the full franchise on the other?
Well, the transition I take a chance at. But I would just go up to Jameis and his agent, like, look, if you think you're going to get X amount of dollars on the open market, you're out of your mind. We're willing to give you this. We're willing to play ball with you. But it's got to be under our terms. Now, if you think you won't get a better deal, sign or not.
I wonder what these quarterback-starved teams think of Jameis Winston. I wonder.
Well, you know what? The thing that is going for Jameis that he wouldn't have with any other team, to my knowledge. There was no bigger supporter of Jameis before he was drafted in that building, one buck. Not in the stadium, but in that building, one buck, than Jason Light. Jason Light was on Jameis' radar,
and
or vice versa.
And ownership.
Were they?
They also supported him.
Well, Jason...
Through the suspension.
Sure.
Supported.
But what I'm saying is Jason was hot after Jameis when he was working in Arizona, when Jameis was a freshman at Florida State. At the time, they weren't so sure about a quarterback at the time, with Carson Palmer being up there in years and Brittle.
And you're hoping you're not drafted in the top three to get a guy
yes,
like Winston.
And I was told by people who would know that in Arizona, Jason Light was already scouting Jameis heavily, thinking, okay, if we're going to need a quarterback, we'll trade up, we'll get this guy. He was already, and it just so happened by sheer coincidence that he takes the job here in Tampa Bay with Lovie Smith, and the Bucks go into the tank, and lo and behold, there's Jameis.
I was talking to a writer before the game, Lee, that you know. I won't mention his name. He's a Bears fan. And he said unequivocally, now this was before today's game, before the pick six in overtime, but I don't think that is going to change his attitude. He said, I'd take Winston in Chicago in a heartbeat, and they're an instant playoff contender.
Because Trubisky's that bad.
Because he'd have a defense, a real, and he'd know that it's a real stingy defense behind him, and that could affect his mindset. Now, is that giving Winston too much credit
I think
he would change his game? How do we know he would change his game? We don't know that.
Well, one thing is, I'm pretty much convinced Jameis would be perfect for a West Coast offense. I really believe that. And what does Chicago run? West Coast offense. I think in a West Coast offense, he would thrive. I think it's a legitimate question. I don't know the answer. Is Arians' offense good for Jameis? You know, Steve Isbitt's Joe Buck saying, he wrote a story recently. Is Jameis a better quarterback? I don't know.
I said, I don't know.
I'm not sure either. I would lean toward yes, but I'm looking at the 5,000 yards. I think mechanically he's better. I don't think there's any question about that. Beckles seems to think this offense is not that good for Jameis. It'll get the good out of him, but also will enhance the bad.
By the way, Lee, we made our final Buck picks of the season, and I believe you, me, and Steve all picked the Falcons. I don't know if Rock Riley even made a pick. I don't know.
Oh.
Unfortunately, the three of us were correct. We all picked Atlanta by a close score. Now, I didn't say it was going to happen off a pick six. although Dr. Wink did.
Dr. Wink did, and Joe Henderson. Yeah. But you see what Devin White told me today?
No.
Well, I come up to him. He's by himself. And he was half scolding me, half not. He goes, You always come up here afterwards. I said, what do you mean? I've already spoke. You always come up here afterwards. I said, after the mob is here?
You're looking for nuggets.
He said, after the mob's here. I said, that's why. I said, well, I said, anybody? So 50 people have the same stuff. What's the point?
Absolutely.
And he goes, okay, I get it. And I said, I'm here to, you know. And I asked him, and he didn't know about it. I asked him about what we spoke of earlier, that he's the first rookie in 30 years to have two scoops and scores. He had no idea about that. I go, really? And I said, yeah. And then, and oddly enough, you know, he was sort of complaining about the mob was already there. And sure enough, what happens? Here comes the mob again. But that's what I try to do. I watch the mob. I try to stay away from the mob. When the mob leaves, at the very end, I go in and start talking to the player, or I wait till, you know, just because I want to get a one-on-one.
We're very close to wrapping up this week, wrapping up the 2019 season. I think the year went by quick. I do. I think this season went by quick. So did Aaron. Aaron told me before the game, he thinks the season went by very quickly. Usually that's a good sign. In other words, it didn't drag on. I asked him how he's feeling physically. Has he had any problems? He said, absolutely not.
Oh, by the way, Friday, when I talked to him Friday, and he was asked the same thing, how are you feeling physically? He said, best in years. That's a good sign.
Now, we should have asked him again after the pick six. I saw him reaching in for Tums into his pocket over there, Lee.
Not a little Cinnabril.
Lee, we're going to be back in the next day or two with another podcast. Isbits could be on it. We'll see. Yeah, we may talk him into it, Lee. But we'll do it at One Buck Place. And we make this promise to our thousands of listeners all around the world, Guam, Vietnam, whatever, you know, Hawaii, Lisbon, wherever.
Well, this Hawaii's a state.
Yeah, Hawaii's a state. We make this vow. We don't take the off-season off, Lee.
There's no off-season.
We show up, we post, we do columns, and we do podcasts. And that's why we are who we are.